Hello and welcome to Onk Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jason Harris. Onk Live On Air is a podcast from Onk Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onk Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Aaron Crane, MD, MPH, for Oncology Fellows' ongoing Advice from the Director series. Dr. Crane is director of the Gynecologic Oncology Fellowship Program at Atrium Health Levine Cancer Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina. Dr. Crane originally planned to become an ear, nose, and throat surgeon until performing her OBGYN rotation in medical school. She found that gynecologic oncology allowed her to engage her interest in surgery, women's health, and chemotherapy. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Crane explains why Atrium decided to launch a gyn-onc fellowship, how she helps fellows navigate the current political landscape while maintaining high-level care, and how she tries to model a good work-life balance for her trainees. Dr. Crane, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
To start at the very beginning, how did you eventually decide to become a gynecologic oncologist? What was your path to this point in life?
I was definitely drawn to surgery, but I really wasn't sure in what way. And I initially had actually thought I wanted to do ENT. And I did ENT and I liked it. And I reserved my OBGYN rotation for the end of med school because I was certain I would not like it. And as it turned out, I actually really enjoyed it. And the first time I set foot in an operating room with a GYN oncologist, I knew that it kind of checked all the boxes in terms of really interesting surgeries, women's health, cancer, which I find fascinating, and chemotherapy. And so, you know, it was all those things together. And I think a lot of people who go into OBGYN, you know, think that gynecologic oncology is depressing and obstetrics is great and it's so much fun delivering babies. But if you ask any of us GYN oncologists, we would take our job over that any day.
I think it's funny that so many oncologists decide to become oncologists when they're in residency, when they're doing the rotations. Is that typical of all medical professions, as you know, or is it pretty unique to oncology?
Well, I think it depends on the profession. You know, I knew I liked women's healthcare and surgery and that maybe I wanted to do GYN oncology, but the whole field of OBGYN is so diverse that when you're in residency, you get exposed to such extremes of care. So maternal fetal medicine, which is all about maternal and fetal physiology, versus oncology, which is about cancer in an older population, versus reproductive endocrinology. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the residency program that you're in and the diversity within that as well. So I don't think it's uncommon for residents going into OBGYN to decide when they're in residency and have a little bit more time in those subspecialties. But I do think it extends to other specialties as well. You know, if you look at general surgery, for example, there's so many different surgical subspecialties. And I think until you get exposed to more of those in kind of day-to-day life in residency, you don't always know right away.
Obviously, by the time they become oncology fellows, you know, your trainees have become more settled in their career path. So kind of what do you do when a trainee comes to you and says, Dr. Crane, I'm not sure if I want to stay with gynecologic oncology. What do I do now?
So fortunately, we've just started our fellowship, so I haven't had any fellows come in and say that to me. And hopefully that would have been decided, you know, before they apply to a fellowship program because it's such a huge commitment. But when residents express an interest in GYN oncology, I think as a division, we're really supportive to make sure that they get involved in research, that they're in the operating room, that they do away electives sometimes to really get their feet wet and understand what the life of a GYN oncologist is like. But I would say if they come to us after that and decide it's not the right path for them, you know, it's important to know why and to make sure that they're making the decision for the right reasons. And if that's really the case, we support whatever else they decide to do. I would say, you know, if a fellow came to me and said something that they weren't certain about their career choice, you know, it would be a little more concerning because it's such a big commitment, you know, and obviously has implications for their lives in the fellowship program. So that would certainly be something we'd take more seriously. But again, same questions, you know, why do you feel that way? Is there something, you know, we could be doing better or something that you feel like you're not getting that you need that we could do to facilitate that? I think that would be our reaction.
As you just said, Levine, this is a new program. So Why did you, you know, want to start a gynecologic oncology fellowship, and what are you hoping to accomplish with the program?
I think that really when we talked about it as a division, there are two main reasons. One is, you know, we're very passionate about education. Myself and my partners came from programs in which education was valued. We already have a residency here. We're all involved in the residency in various capacities. We also have medical students from UNC and now Wake Forest that rotate through. So education has always been an integral part of what we've done. But, you know, we also, it just makes sense. We're very high volume, despite the fact that, you know, we've been regarded as a community hospital for a long time. All of us are involved in academics and societies. And so it just made sense with the resources that we had available here and our passion for education that we'd start a program.
Unfortunately, gynecology has gotten a little more politicized lately. Mm-hmm. So kind of how would you advise your fellows to handle when medical care becomes the source of political conflict?
It's been challenging because all of us, regardless of what subspecialty we're in, are passionate about women's care and making sure that women have access to the services that they need. Yet our hospital, you know, in particular, is largely government funded. So there's obviously conflicts that arise there. I think, you know, on a personal day-to-day level, just continuing to provide the best care that you can for your patients and advocating for them and supporting each other during these difficult times is the best that we can do. But, you know, on a larger level, a political scale, there are many ways to become involved and to take action, you know, from philanthropy to, you know, boots on the ground in DC and in the community. But I would say, you know, being true to yourself, taking care of your patients and making the right decisions, you know, that's really, you know, the most important part on a day-to-day basis of what we can do. We know, though, that as GYN oncologists and more experienced surgeons, that may affect our practice, what we're seeing coming in, you know, as a result of some of the politics. We don't really know yet what the implications are of that, but we have an idea. So that's something that's evolving as well.
So when, you know, your fellows have that sort of complicated situation, a patient comes to them and says, there's an emergency, I've got cancer, I'm also pregnant. You say to them, you know, there's one answer here. The treatment is an abortion. What happens at that point? You know, what do you tell your fellow who's facing some pretty serious questions at that point?
Well, I think, you know, we've been dealing with patients who are pregnant and have cancer for a long time, you know, and there's standards of care that are well established. And sometimes it does involve an abortion. And if that's the case, if we were in a state where we can still perform them legally and not be prosecuted. But if that changes, then, you know, we're going to have to make decisions about what's best for patient care. And if we can't provide that here, making sure that we get patients to, you know, an area where it can be provided. But we're here to support our fellows. I think if they were ever in a situation like that, we wouldn't expect them to, you know, have to make a decision, you know, on their own. I think that's an important part of the program, is being here to support them and having our faculty and staff, you know, available and division heads and directors available to help support women and support our trainees.
Politics aside, fellowship is obviously an extremely stressful time in life. So how do you encourage your fellows to take care of their own health and wellness?
We actually have a wellness curriculum here that's part of our residency. And so that was already up and running. When we started a fellowship, we just naturally folded that into the mix. And so, for example, on didactic mornings, which are Thursdays, once a month, there's wellness time for residents to go and take care of personal appointments and have personal time. That's been extended into the fellow schedule as well. You know, making sure that there's adequate funds and education for learning and the time off, making sure that they take time off, that's guaranteed. And of course, paying attention to work hours, making sure that those aren't violated. But I think the nice part about our program is that, you know, we're up and running independent of fellows with our residency and with our faculties. So having them join our practice is really purely for, you know, educational purposes and the purposes of having a successful fellowship. We don't need them as extra bodies or, you know, workhorses to get things done for us. So our expectation is, you know, while they'll work hard, they'll also have time for personal care and taking care of themselves and their families if needed.
From the physicians I've talked to, it seems like the interest in fellows' wellness is a relatively new phenomenon. So what's driving that? Why has medicine suddenly noticed that trainees are getting burnt out?
Well, I think, you know, unfortunately, it's everything happening at once, right? I mean, I think people were realizing that physicians were getting burnt out too. And Dr. Fowler was a huge proponent of that, you know, at one of our meetings talking about physician wellness. And even though as GYN oncologists, we derive a huge amount of meaning from what we do and gratification, a lot of us are pretty burnt out from working really hard, from dealing with patients who we care about very much, but, you know, some of them are dying and we lose our patients. It's stressful. And then trying to achieve a work-life balance. So, you know, a lot of that trickles down. It affects fellows. It affects residents. They're all going through the same thing. But I would say in our field anyway, Dr. Fowler's work and some of the surveys he sent out really drew attention to our specialty specifically and making sure that we take time for ourselves and take care of our trainees as well.
You're the director, so you're the leader. How do you model for your trainees a good work-life balance?
I mean, a lot of it is leading by example, right? So I don't think that you can sugarcoat the fact that our profession is demanding. We often work long hours. And again, you know, are taking care of patients and facing death and dying on a daily basis. So I think we work hard. There's no question about that. They see it when they work with us, but we also have a work-life balance where, you know, for example, I have a soccer game tonight. That's an add-on that I have to get my daughter to. And so any clinical activity stops when it's time for me to go get her and do those things. Same thing on the weekends when we're on call, we're here for patients, but when we're not, our pagers are off or with our families. Like I said, I think some of it's leading by example, making sure that you have time to exercise. We, as a group, will do onc runs where, you know, some of the faculty try and join and the residents join. And now our fellow, hopefully, and once a month, we'll go running at night, run a few miles and just talk and then come back and go home. So things like that.
That's all we have time for today. Thanks again to my guest, Aaron Crane, MD, MPH. And thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.